Well, good afternoon and welcome. This is Mike Harris, broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also broadcasting on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016, and today we've got a new guest, someone who's never appeared before. But I read an article that he put up, and the article was so intriguing and compelling, I had to reach out and contact him and got him on. So let's welcome Charlie Smith. Charlie, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me on board. I appreciate it.
Hey, well, I appreciate you making the time out of your schedule to come on. So why don't you give people a little bit of background about who you are, where you come from, so whenever we get into the nitty-gritty of this article, they know you're bona fide, so to speak.
Well, I'm an old cold warrior. I date back to before the Berlin Wall fell and did some top secret work with the U.S. Army. Mainly it was in logistics, but we also did more than beans, butter, and bullets and blood. We also did some things like encryption and wargaming. I mean, this even predates the internet. Thank you very much. And you know, getting into the wargaming section, that was really kind of fun because that got me into the secure facilities so I could review the appropriate yields of chemical, biological, nuclear weaponry on both sides, get evaluations of the tactical and strategic weapon systems that were employed by virtually every nation on Earth at the time. And after having lots of fun with that, all of a sudden the Cold War ended, the wall fell, and of course the contractor looked at me and said, "That's a wrap, thank you very much." And I went on my merry way to work with the state of Virginia, doing nice things like communicating with the FBI and the Virginia State Police to track stolen vehicles, criminals, and others using the NCIC, that's National Criminal Information Center, and NLITS, National Law Enforcement databases. And one day, a friend of mine from the old Cold War scenario walked up to me and said, "You'll never guess what they're shipping to China." And I'm like, "What?" And so he looked at me and goes, "They're shipping military-grade encryption." And having had a little experience with secure information and how to make it even more secure, I kind of looked at him and said, "Military grade? Nah, you got to be kidding me." And he says, "Nah, go ahead, do a freedom of information request." And lo and behold, it turned out to be not only true, but true in spades. So I started writing about some of these things openly and ended up leaving my engineering career for the great world of reporting and journalism. That was during the wonderful Clinton years in the 1990s. And I've done things like, freedom of information requests, where I actually had to take the administration to court. I've been to federal court 4 times, 1-3. Not bad for a programmer. Managed to yield a little bit over a couple of thousand pages of detailed documentation of military-grade hardware and encryption, satellite technology, radiation-hardened chips, things like that that were being shipped to communist China and other places, including the former Soviet Union, and even directly to places like Arizmo 16, which is their equivalent of Los Alamos. Wonderful stuff. Well, after writing about national security and being a pain to some very highly placed individuals and companies, the Clinton years ended and my career in journalism more or less came to a grinding halt because the conservatives who took power, even though they were doing a lot of the same things, really weren't interested in hearing about them anymore. So that sort of soured me on that game, and I went back to engineering and basically established my own company in information security. I've, you know, done both offensive and penetration work as well as defensive work. These days I'm concentrating pretty much on the defensive side with encryption and encryption technology, trying to bring it to the people. So we've had a lot of fun doing all of these things over the past 25 or so years, and it has brought me into contact with a number of people, both positive and negative, and a wide array of folks, from military to industrial to academic and political. I've made some friends and I've made some enemies. So
let me ask a quick question. I can truthfully say
I have been told by a very good friend of mine who frequents with the Chinese, the Taiwanese military, that he was told by a highly placed defector that usually when I write something, the PLA headquarters actually prints it off and circulates it around. I'm very intimately familiar with the Chinese military intelligence operations, having rubbed into them during the 1990s. The 2nd and 4th Department of PLA headquarters are acutely aware of my existence, and I've also been told never to visit the mainland simply because it's not likely I would return alive.
Well, let me ask a real quick question. Why do you feel that the people need encryption at this point in time, at this juncture in history?
It's never been more important for us, both for our current security, both personal as well as national, as it is at this time, and it's going to grow ever more important as things move along, the Internet of Things moves into your life. To be honest with you, I've seen the way that the U.S. government deals with this, as we have witnessed over the past few days with Apple. The federal government is not really fond of the word encryption, to the point of where they don't even encrypt their own stuff, much to the dismay of some 21.5 million federal employees whose unencrypted records have fallen basically into hands of person or persons unknown, most likely the Chinese military, to which there is quite a bit of consequences. In other words, in short, the government's not going to look out after you. You're going to have to look out after yourself. You're going to have to protect your own information, your own financial data, your own transmissions, both in email and text, voice, other things like that. And the access to these things is not necessarily limited to government entities, but to private people such as criminals, terrorists, and other gangs who have been taking advantage of this for quite some time. A real good example is ISIS made quite a bit of money with their hacking teams stealing U.S. consumer credit card information and then financing their terrorist operations with your and my money. Thank you very much. Of course, they followed in the footsteps of the Russian military, who actually, we'll say, contracted out to the SOFI group, which is a sort of a quasi-military organization of independence working for Moscow in Moscow. They attacked Georgia during the Georgia War and helped knock down things like the power grid in coordination with the Russian airstrikes. Well, they also financed their operation with stolen U.S. credit cards. Why bother calling home to Moscow for lousy rubles when you've got real hardcore dollars thanks to, you know, John Q. Public's MasterCard? Well, you know, there's a lot of dangerous things out that are roaming out there, and the last thing you really want to do is stick your neck out or your family. A fine example of something that people do all the time that is extraordinarily dangerous, they'll go out to the store and they'll buy these wonderful wireless alarm systems or these wonderful IP wireless nanny cams and hook them up. Well, I hate to break it to most of you, but just recently, most of those nanny cams and a good portion of the wireless alarm systems that have been advertised have been proven to not only be leaky, but to the point of being dangerous. In other words, the burglar might be able to turn off your alarm system and walk right through your front door, or the pervert down the block might be looking through your nanny cam and talking dirty to your child over
now,
the internet.
Now,
thank you.
Now you're talking, because I've seen this firsthand, where a nanny cam can intercept the signal from another nanny cam that's not even yours. Okay, let me just end it there. But I have seen this up close and personal.
Oh yeah, and in fact, some people are, like I said, are crazy enough that they hook it up to the internet. And therefore, some guy in, say, another country could be doing exactly the same thing. Well, it gets worse as we go on and on, you know, both for the throughout the individual and corporate and government security. Well, about the only real way that you can protect yourself is to start to encrypt this data. And encryption, when you say it to somebody, they kind of look at you like, isn't that a little skull-headed guy that used to be on HBO that did those?
Well, it's like you're talking about magic or something for them, and it's not.
Yeah,
it's just the algorithms is all it is.
Well, a nice way of putting it is with a pack of cards, a pencil, and a piece of paper, you can create a code that the FBI and the NSA can't break. If you have the same skill to play with dice or cards or roulette, you have basically the same skill to understand what encryption can and can't do for you. It's really based on random numbers and being able to substitute those random numbers for real words and other things, and then take that random number away and you end up with the real word again. Thank you very much. It's fairly simple. As I tried to explain it to a U.S. senator once who kind of glazed over, I went through several different iterations. The easiest way was think of it as signaling from a catcher to the pitcher, telling him whether it's going to be the fastball or the curve or your knuckleball. Usually the light goes on, especially with politicians, when you make some sort of sports reference. So in any event, that's just on partly, just a little picture on the personal side. And it's coming. Like I've just read, come across the, I'm rather connected with some of the hacking groups. One of the hacking groups is already running alerts on the new internet hooked up toilet, where some hacker can literally lift your seat up, flush it, do other things to you while you're on that brand new super duper Japanese made hooked to the internet toilet. Thank you. No. There are times where analog is the way to go. Okay. You know, the bottom line is that these things are going to become more and more commonplace. We've seen Barbie hooked up to the internet. You can buy a Barbie doll, and there are several other types of dolls where they will communicate with your wireless network directly to the computer systems hooked up with the toy maker, and they can hold a conversation talking basically with a very large computer system at the other end. Well, that's the good news. The bad news is that if it is not secure, then somebody could be listening in. If it's not secure, as we found with many of these low-cost wireless systems, it could be literally leaking out your login and password for your router and your wireless network. So the teenager down the block can log into your network and try to hack into the FBI, and they'll track them down to you. Thank you.
And then you wonder why the cops kick in the wrong door time and again.
Yeah. Very dangerous. Hey, one of the latest trends among hackers is called swatting. If they find somebody out there on one of these chat boards and things that they don't like, what they'll do is they'll fake they'll find out who they are essentially by tracking them down by personal information. And usually if you don't have very good guards on your systems, they'll find out where you're located. And then they'll call up the local police and say, help, help, this person is holding me here hostage. They're going to shoot me. They've already shot my son. And voila, now you have the SWAT team showing up at your front door. And that has happened several times. In particular, the most dangerous part about this is that the person doing the swatting can be even located outside of the United States. As in the examples that I saw, one was in Finland, another one was in Canada. And they were essentially perusing certain game boards and decided that they didn't like certain people, so they found out who and where they were and went ahead and called the local SWAT team to come in barging through their front door, you know, with the battering ram and the AR-15s all pointed right at you, ready to rip. Very dangerous. So you can see we're getting to the point now where maybe you should put some guards into place. Maybe you want to find out what your teenager is doing, if they're out on a board all the time, and which board is that, and are you releasing any information? Maybe you want to be more careful about what toy you pick up for your kid. The last one that was really disturbing was the wireless front door doorbell, which hooks up to your local internet router, was leaking your secure router key directly into the open air, so anybody with a laptop within, say, 100 yards could log into your system at your expense, no problem. Even though your router says, I'm secure with a super-duper, you know, WPA password encryption, hey, if there's a device hooked up to it that's leaking that password in the open, boom, you're dead. So it gets worse as we go down the field. We can go from individuals to corporate ladder. We've seen what's happened to Sony, for example.
Well, we've seen what's happened at that 60 Minutes special that was on 2-3 weeks ago about how the Chinese military is wholesale hacking American business and stealing their IP, their intellectual property and other proprietary data. And it's just crushing. I mean, the U.S. companies are spending years and millions and billions of dollars. The Chinese come in and steal it.
Absolutely. You know, we've had the how to make white paint go out the door, and it was a multi-million dollar investment by the companies involved, and boom, it disappears, and guess where it pops up? Bang, right over there in China. Well, you know, we've also had other neat little things that sometimes walk right past obvious people. The infamous and most dangerous organization, the most feared organization in the U.S. government, the IRS, was happily sending fake refund checks or faked to fake individuals to the same address in Shanghai. Literally something on the order of about 1,000 hacked names and social security numbers all sent to the same address in Shanghai. Thank you very much. They're paying attention. You know, they lost several million dollars on that one scam. And it went to, I believe, three addresses, one to Shanghai, one to Singapore, and I think the other one was Hong Kong. You know, a good cue here is if you have an audit in place and you see like 900 checks all going to the same location, it may not be one taxpayer. Duh. Okay. You know, I go through this with a lot of my clients. There are three sets of basics that we need to deal with. One is the security end. The encryption takes care of a lot of that. Another is the audit feature, which is essentially there are a lot of audit software and procedures. You got to keep an eye on what's going on. And, you know, the third and, you know, final set is you also have to have accountability, which means that if somebody does something, you got to hold them accountable for it. And we've seen basically a lack of that in our public institutions and in many cases inside corporations, which like to cover this up. The Sony hack is a classic example. They were hacked by the North Koreans. I believe that was, Unit 121. They're actually based, believe it or not, in Shenyang. They work with the Chinese very closely, but they are North Koreans. This unit basically hacked in, got into their email system, and then just, boom, unreleased all these thousands and thousands of emails. And now we suddenly find out what producers feel about actors, what actors feel about producers, what lawyers feel about all of them. It has ruined careers. It has caused people to lose tons of money. Well, you know, if you run a small business, a hacker gets into your email account, he can do all sorts of wonderful things with your clients, like send them emails saying, you owe me money, send it to this address.
Well, how many times has this happened where I'll get an email from somebody I know and they'll say, hi, check this out. It's really cool. And you click on it, it's some weight loss product or something. And then the weight loss product, you try to get out of it and it, are you sure you want to leave this page? Hell yeah. That's when I pull the cord out of my computer because I know they're stealing my address book.
Right. And, you know, you got to be real careful about this. And then, for example, like on my designs, I give you that option. Do you really want to look at this in a web format, which is, you know, with images, or would you prefer just to look at the text by itself to ensure that it's really legitimate? Because if you do it by the web with images and linking out usually through a browser-style operation, there is communication taking place. If you're looking at it in literally flat-ass text, thank you very much. You, even though you may not be able to read two-thirds of it because it's all scrambled like code, classic Windows and documentation type of things, you can also read where the actual real text is and go, this is an ad, throw it away. Well, definitely have your antivirus stuff in place. Definitely, if you've got firewalls, put them up. I like Norton. Other people like McAfee, there's FireEye, they do a very good job. Palo Alto just fumbled the ball recently. Their firewalls, there's a set of security on emails called TLS. Their firewalls don't recognize TLS at all, which of course is about 95% of all the email traffic today. So for all practical purposes, their firewall is just a useless paperweight. Thank you. You spend, you know, $500-$600 for a piece of equipment. You figure it's going to do something for you. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. Well, you know, even in the commercial side of business, that's where my story comes into play. The blowback, which is what got your attention, sometimes even they get burned. And we're talking about, this is major corporations, government entities, banks, gigantic networks that hook themselves up to the internet, that actually run the internet in some cases, stock market, New York Stock Exchange, the Chicago Exchange, all these guys, they use very large communications devices that are parlayed by people like Juniper Technologies out of Pasadena, California. Now, the kick here is Juniper just recently discovered, gosh, somebody put a back door in software in our communications devices.
Well, I tell you what, we're at our break here, Charlie, so hang on a minute, folks. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes, more with Charlie Smith, more about the need for encryption, the more need to protect your own data. Be right back after this short break. Well, good evening and welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on VeteransToday.com as well as on FreedomSlips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016, and my guest is Charlie Smith. Charlie, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
So where were we? You were just getting into the good part about the Juniper network here. So,
yes, Juniper manufactures communications devices, used by lots of businesses, banks, corporations. And suddenly somebody said, gee, there's a back door in these devices. Well, this back door was very professionally done, extraordinarily professionally done. And we can even trace the timing of it. The bottom line is the original backdoor was put in around 2008, just after Obama took office. The backdoor itself was essentially like taking a roulette wheel and skewing it so it would only come up with a series of numbers that you know, fixing the wheel for all practical purposes. Same thing. You know, the same thing you could do to, like, a slot machine. You could fix it so you know when it's going to pay off. Essentially, the technical name for this was dual EC, or dual elliptical curve encryption. And it's the security aspect of the Juniper systems. Well, the dual EC was a brainchild of the National Security Agency, our friends at Fort Meade. And they even made it a national standard at one time through their buddies over at NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards. So federal contractors would use the dual EC methodology to create random numbers. Well, if you polish this thing just right, which is what happened to Juniper, you can predict what those random numbers are. And if you can predict what the random numbers are, then you can read the traffic going up and down over the internet from these major institutions like banks. And that's essentially what this was meant to do. Now, of course, that original back door would only be useful to a national network. In other words, a nation state that was capable of monitoring major commercial trunks globally. You know, both on fiber optic, undersea, as well as satellite systems. The intent would, of course, been to watch, say, financial transactions in Europe that potentially could have been either major terrorist funding or Iran or North Korea funneling money around. Well, somebody else figured out where this little back door was. And believe me, this is professional. We're talking about perhaps no more than 5 or 6 characters strategically placed in nearly a million lines of code. Very difficult even for a professional to find. The cover story issued by Juniper when they found it was that they were doing a code audit. Somewhat unlikely. Well, the original backdoor was hacked, changed. That series of numbers were altered, so someone else.
So this would be like you leave to go to work that day, your wife changes the locks on the house, and you come back in, you can't get in, but she's still got free access.
You got it. Now, here's the evil twist. Obviously, putting that in, you would think that the NSA would notice. Well, depending on the updates and what they were watching, they may never have seen this. Their offensive group, which came up with this, may have been quite capable of monitoring banks and institutions that they were designed to if those guys didn't update their software. Okay, whereas everyone else, hey, they got the new stuff. Guess what? The other guy with the new key locking out the NSA was able to get in there and watch what's going on. Now, remember, this is just watch only. You can't literally do anything with that other than see the traffic going up and down and actually understand it. Now, Congress, by the way, did ask the Department of Homeland Security how many U.S. government agencies were affected by this. The answer from DHS is we don't know.
Which means all of them.
Yeah. Well, you can more or less make that surmise. Unfortunately for DHS, the U.S. government doesn't know where all of its equipment is, much less what class it is. So, yeah, you could pretty much expect that major agencies all through the government were using this equipment and they had the second back door in it, the one with the altered key. Now, here's the real trip. The guy who put in the altered key came back, changed it, added in something that was somewhat unprofessional and a little bit more obvious. He actually put in a back door with an administrative login and password, specifically saying, if I log in to that particular device, I can override everything else. I can log in as anyone else. I can change data that this network is logged into on any of the computers that it's hooked up to. I can suck data off. I can do anything I want. And on the way out, I can clean up the administrative log so nobody will see my footprints in the sand, in this case digital sand, and no one will know I was even there. Now, there you go. Now, this third little backdoor piece is not something that a nation state could use. That sounds more like an individual or group, because a nation state obviously would be able to use networks like China, Russia, us, others, and monitor things on a global basis. But logging into individual machines, that's something that someone who doesn't have access to that capability would want to do. Well, what does this mean? What it means is that since about 2012 or so, someone had the capability of logging into defense contractors, almost every agency in the U.S. government, every bank in the United States, the stock market, and other places all around the world, monitor what was going on, change it if they wanted to, and then walk away. It also means that they're quite capable, while they were doing this, of putting in other back doors so that if the first one gets discovered, they still have another way of getting in there. Thank you. Now, when you have the concept to sort of wrap around here, think in terms of what would it be like if you had the capability of, say, causing a flash crash on the stock market, or even picking out a couple of stocks to flash crash.
You would know absolutely when to short the stock and or the market.
Precisely. This is a Goldfinger kind of operation for sure. You could make a ton of money in a heartbeat without, you know, any operational cash on your own part, and it would all be legal and no one would ever know it. Or let's just say you got really mad one day and decided, hey, I'm going to take all of the accounts at Chase Manhattan and turn them to zero. Or got into Lockheed and decided to steal the long-range stealth bomber, the new LRSB designs, and sell them to whomever. Or the F-35 software. CIA and get an accurate list of all their overseas spies.
Okay, well, profile who this individual or group is. Who are they? What do they want? What's their end game?
We have no idea who they are. No one knows. The FBI and the CIA and the NSA are going nutso trying to figure out where this came from. And the reason is, the original hack, obviously so well placed, and obviously coming from our friends at Fort Meade, somebody had to have known about that. Somebody somewhere. And somebody somewhere told someone else who hacked in and put in the back doors. So we have a mole. We got somebody in a very highly placed situation here. And we do know this, because the agencies are scrambling all over the place trying to find out who it was that did this. Now, I can tell you another good little sample of the reason of things that are happening. The NSA recently and suddenly announced that they were merging their offensive and defensive hacker operations together. Well, the obvious answer to that is when the Juniper hack kind of came out, it was rather a lame excuse by Juniper saying that we found this with a code audit. The obvious answer there is the NSA discovered it somehow. Well, my bet is the offensive and defensive guys in two separate departments, the only way that they ever talked to each other was with non-technical management, bureaucrats sitting across the table, little understanding what they're saying. Well, the offensive boys designed this thing and put it out in the field. So, and then they sat back and watched all the information as it flowed by on the particular targeted sites. Well, the defensive guys may have noticed what was going on when the hacks got put in, but they didn't know the offensive boys had created this thing. So they figured there's probably like one or two, we can take care of those on the systems that they were watching. Well, I could envision one day in the lunchroom at Fort Meade, one of the offensive coordinators sits down with one of the defensive coordinators, and they start talking, and suddenly they find that they've both come across the same problem. One of them created a monster, and the other one found it. And then they suddenly realized, oh no, this thing is mutated, and it's out in the wild now in someone else's control. And I know that, at that point, that's when panic set in, because that's when the phone call got made to Pasadena telling Juniper, you make the announcement, we'll get the patches out as soon as possible, thank you very much indeed, and we'll write you a check for any damages done from loss of sales. Well, the bottom line is we don't know who did this. We don't know how much damage has been done. It is very difficult to determine if there are any remaining backdoors. And I think you can pretty much gather from what I've discussed here that if somebody really wanted to pull the plug on us, like turn out the lights, change your account, your bank account to zero, crash the stock market all on the same day, it sounds like they could have done it. And they may still be capable of doing it if they left back doors.
Well, let me give you a way of looking at things. Sometimes when you're dealing with Asians in particular, the threat of a lawsuit is more damaging than an actual lawsuit. You have more leverage threatening to file, because once you file, it's a declaration of war. And they know that there's going to be losses on both sides. So sometimes just giving a demonstration example to someone is enough to make them cough up the millions or billions or whatever it is you want out of them, get them to do things your way.
Yeah. Or this could be Vladimir Putin's wet dream. Either way, it's very clear that this is a hammer. To the way I kind of put it, think of it as a cyber extinction event. This is the computer equivalent of a very large asteroid approaching the entire Earth. If you'd like to crash Western civilization, you can do it. And we have government to thank.
Well, let me point something out here that Putin did a couple years ago. About 2 years ago, he put out an edict that anyone within the Russian sphere of influence was to no longer buy any Western-made microprocessors and no Western-made operating systems. That's gotten not a lot of mention, but all the Russian weapon systems, all the Russian power grid, everything else is now running on a different set. They're not running on Intel and AMD processors anymore. Just not happening.
Well, there's pluses and minuses in all of these things, because a very good example, the operating system that runs most of the power plants, both nuclear and regular, around the world is actually a variant of Windows 95. I'm not kidding. It's called WinCC. In fact, that's the operating system that was in place in the Ukraine when it got hacked over the Christmas holidays. And the hack was caused because one of the operators opened up an email that had an Excel file with a virus embedded in it. Thank you. Now, the point being is Windows 95 is about as ancient as, say, a steam engine is in terms of cyber technology. In other words, there are very well-known holes in the system. WinCC, by the way, is sold by Siemens. It actually controls a good number of our power grid and power companies around here. In fact, it is so well-designed, it actually has a hard-coded administrator login with a hard-coded password embedded in the program. Thank you. Real secure. So I am surprised at this point that someone somewhere hasn't decided that they would like to hack into one of the nuclear power plants and, say, shut down the water pumps and see what happens. We saw the Ukraine get hacked and lose power. The only way that they could recover was literally send technicians out in the field to manually throw the breakers that had been thrown by the software, manually reset them and put them back in place. That was the only way they could do it. They'd take the system offline and go manual all the way around. They were lucky that they could do that. Our power grid is not so lucky. It's a lot more remote, and many of these things are not necessarily just hooked up to power grids or power plants. A very similar operating system runs the vast majority of water and sewage systems across the United States. Now, could you imagine turning off the sewage system and causing damage to it in the process of, say, New York City, to the point where it would be a month before they could get the sewage system back online? Could be a problem there.
We probably have a little cholera outbreak in the meantime.
Yeah, and a lot of people leaving the city and a lot of lost. Yeah, you get my drift.
Absolutely.
The company that supplies this, or one of them, I actually logged into their website, and they had the source code of their operating system, the command codes that the operators would issue to turn on and off things, as well as the full electronic schematics of all of their equipment that controlled it as advertising. And of course, there was no security at all, no encryption, not even a password and a login. Yeah. So,
well, let me ask a question here. So, if, you know, all right, I have a couple questions. First mm-hmm. of all, it appears what I'm inferring from what you're saying is that there is a tremendously huge market for a commercial, robust encryption package that could be embraced by individuals as well as businesses.
Yes.
Okay. Now, my understanding is the current state of the art that the NSA is operating at is 384. Is that hackable, or do we need to go to 512?
They have recommended, because of quantum computing in the public realm, on the RSA to go 3072. I'm currently working at 2048 with my commercial package, and the next upgrade will be a release to 4096 to exceed their minimum standards. And they're doing this in anticipation of quantum computing. Now, keep in mind, there is a distinct difference between private symmetrical encryption and public or asymmetrical. Now we're talking really technical, and people are going to go, oh, I'm going to fall over. Not really. Private means I create a key, I give that key strictly to you, one-on-one. I don't send it over the internet. This is one of the reasons why the Federal Reserve Bank is really good at protecting themselves. They have couriers that hand-walk keys to different locations. Okay? Symmetrical encryption is probably the most powerful, and, of course, it's also the most secure. The only problem is I can't send the key to you over the internet, because if somebody intercepts it, then they're in too. That's where public key comes into place. Literally, all that is the key is more or less broken into two parts, one that locks, one that unlocks. I send you one that locks, and you can lock information but you can't get back into it. You send it to me. So anyone trying to get in it can't unlock it because they don't have the other part of the key, the one that unlocks it. And that's what public key encryption does. It's a two-key process. And you can publicly exchange the locking key, and people can send you information, or you can do vice versa. And that's essentially how your credit card operation goes when you go on Amazon. It
so
sends
these are the API keys you're talking about then?
Yes. Okay. It sends you a public key. You encrypt your credit card number and the order and send it back to them, and they unlock that at their end, and they've got the order and can process it, and they let you know. Done. Now, the big problem that we run into with all of this, all of these parts, the commercial, the governmental, even the individual, the problem that we run into is people like FBI Director Comey, bound and determined that the U.S. public should not use encryption because it will protect your security. We're going to protect you from those terrible terrorists. And that's what, you know, the big PR move against Apple is. We're going to protect you from terrorists and those Apple guys who won't let us in on that cell phone. They're bad guys, too. And, you know, you see Fox News just sucking into this. And I'm sitting there going, guys, you don't really understand what they're asking.
Charlie, yeah. we're at our break at the top of the hour. We'll be back in about 4.5 minutes, so stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. More on this very fascinating topic with Charlie Smith. Be right back. Stick around. Good evening. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris, broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also broadcasting on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016, and my guest for this for today is Charlie Smith. Charlie, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
So anyway, we were right at the exciting point here. Please continue.
Ah, yes. We were discussing FBI Director Comey and Apple, and of course, the all service writs that has been delivered to Apple. And then so bent in the news, which is really somewhat strange, but not too untypical. The FBI doesn't like encryption, and probably never has. I mean, my experience dates all the way back to Louis Free with the Clinton administration, and every time anything, either criminal or terrorist, happened, the very first thing he would blame was encryption. And my problem with these guys is they just don't quite understand that they're causing more trouble than they're fixing. The FBI clearly does not like encryption, and a real good way to prove that is, well, just about a week and a half ago, 30,000 some odd FBI and Department of Homeland Security employees' records were sprayed all over the internet by a hacker who picked up the phone and called the DHS IT Security Center and said, "I'm your boss's boss. I forgot my password."
It's that easy,
and
huh?
He was able to get in. And he got their names and addresses, sprayed them all over the internet. Thank you very much.
Let me interject something here. You know, we have a constitutional right to be safe and secure in our papers, in our property. Encryption is an aid to ensuring our security. It may not be on parchment. It may be in a digital format. But aren't we still protected under that constitutional amendment?
It should be, as under the Fourth Amendment. But then again, the FBI doesn't believe that that should be appropriate. And in their case, they're saying that it keeps them out even though they have, quote, legal access. If you want to, you can serve a warrant on the owner of the data and say either turn over the key or spend your time in jail. That's what the Fourth Amendment is all about. You
can
open it up or
but
not.
But they killed that guy.
Right. Now, here's the twist. The phone in question wasn't even owned by him. It was owned by the San Bernardino County Health Department, who he worked for. All right, the FBI and the San Bernardino folks got together with the cell phone, and they were able to recover most of the records from the iCloud that these guys moved up to about 6 weeks prior to the phone itself. So the FBI guys looked at the San Bernardino guys and said, well, we probably should get into the iCloud setup for the phone here. Reset the password. So they told them to reset the password, which, of course, locked everybody out of the cell phone at that point. So basically what you're talking about is you have Barney Fife here, who has zero experience with the systems itself, actually locked themselves out of the phone to begin with. Now, the likelihood that the shooter used his company phone instead of his personal phone to be doing things is fairly low, to say the least. Plus, the communications that did come from that phone, they've already got the metadata from the phone companies. So they already know who he called and when he made the calls and who he texted and when he made the texts. So they can actually go to those other phones and get all the information from them. So they have that capability, but they're not telling anybody that. Now, after they locked themselves out, they basically said, well, Apple, you need to help us. Well, the Apple guys took a look at their records and said, you locked yourself out, didn't you? At that point, the FBI decides, I'm going to serve them with the all writs. You get my drift here.
Okay. Absolutely. They don't want to have egg on their face because they screwed it up.
They screwed it up big time. This is about as bad of an effort at law enforcement and computer and phone forensics as I have ever seen. A high schooler could have done better. If they'd gone to the local high school and given it to one of the kids, they probably would have recovered all the data off the phone in about an hour. If they'd given it to Apple, they could have recovered the data in about an hour. But no, they end up locking themselves out, and now they're taking Apple to court saying, what we want you to do, and this is what they're saying with this all writs, we want you to create a special version of your operating system that you can download onto this phone as an update, which will allow us to hit the passcode as many times as we want and as often as we can until we finally come up with the right combination to get back in. I kid you not. Now, of course, if the lockout procedure created anywhere from a 10 to 12 character passcode instead of the standard 4, it'll take them about 127 years to go through the entire variance until they finally manage to get themselves back in. Now, the key to this is if Apple creates this special version of their own software, it can be used on any other phone. Now, remember, this is an older phone, by the way, the 5S.
Isn't this exactly what Microsoft did by creating these back doors and creating all these problems? Microsoft
did it before they created their systems, not afterwards.
But Microsoft operations are they're so vermin ridden that you have to buy antivirus and you have to buy anti malware and you have to put up firewalls. Microsoft is vermin ridden. That's what they're asking us to do with our cell phones.
Well, the Windows 10 is so bad that even if you actually turn off all of the monitoring things, in many cases it's still sending back information back home to Microsoft. If any program abends, it will literally wrap up all of your files and all of the memory and send it, thank you, back to Microsoft. I'm not real fond of Windows 10. In fact, I don't have it, and I don't have any intention of using it. I do write my encryption for Microsoft as well as for Android. I'm currently working on the Linux version, which is where I figure the future is going to lie, because Windows 10 to me is kind of like the Facebook of operating systems. Privacy is not an issue. See, the whole point here is when you go on the Facebook, you're the product. You're not a customer. You are being resold. One of the things that Windows 10 has in it is an ad bot. You got to get rid of that, meaning that you try to log in or you try to do something, it'll start popping up and telling you, well, you can do it with this software or this vendor software. That's an ad bot, okay? Again, you're not the customer. You are a product being resold. That's the reason why they developed it. And it's unfortunate because their previous operating systems were pretty good. And even worse, the guys at Windows, of course, sent out updates for Windows 8, 7, 8, and 9, trying to get you to go to Windows 10 that also had these same kind of backdoors buried in it, or forcibly, you know, forcing you basically to upgrade to their new Windows variant, which has, there is a keylogger in there, there are file system dumps, the Windows 10 disk encryption sends your disk encryption key to Microsoft. The Microsoft boys say the reason why they do that is that if you happen to lose the key, they'll be able to recover your data for you. Right.
What nice guys. That's really good of them.
Well, you know, that's the reason why in my software I give you the key maker, and I also give you these words. If you lose your key, don't call me. The point is you're in charge of your own key management. If you lose the key, even I can't break in. And that's the reason why I'm worried about this AllWrits thing. Essentially, what the AllWrits is doing to Apple, issued by the FBI, is they are drafting them. They are forcing them to work for the government. This is the kind of stuff that I fought against when I was playing with the Army in the Cold War, when we were looking across at the East Germans on the other side with the Stasi. It was, you become an informant or I'm going to throw you and your family in jail. That's exactly the same thing that this writ is that's being served on Apple. You will either do this or I will put you out of business. And if you don't think they won't do this, back in 2010, hey, this very same wonderful left-wing liberal populist, I'm in for the people administration, went after a guy by the name of Levinson, who ran a company called LavaBit. LavaBit was an encrypted email service. He had over 400,000 customers. They served a warrant on him that said, you will turn over the encryption keys to all of your customers to us. So he figured that's somewhat of a violation of the Fourth Amendment because, you know, it's not necessarily an individual they're looking for. They're looking for everyone. So he says, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to close my business instead. So he shuts down his business. Well, the Obama administration, through the Department of Justice and the FBI, threatened to jail him for closing his business.
That's a stretch of logic for me, actually, how they could even consider that.
Right. Well, hey, on top of it, they also said this is national security, and therefore we're going to swear you to silence. He could only issue statements out through his lawyer that were okayed during this entire process. Eventually, all of it came out. But the point is, he closed the doors on his business, and they threatened to throw him in jail. Okay, I'm running a business, and say the FBI shows up at my door with one of these writs and says, we want you to put a back door in so we can read all the communications for your current customers and everyone in the future. And if you try to close your business, I'm going to throw your butt in jail. I'm sorry, that's what the Stasi did in East Germany to their own citizens. this is the kind of stuff that ranks right next to the Gestapo. It is not American. It is not freedom. It is not right. And it certainly ought to get thrown out. And what I've seen, at least so far, from the legal side, and I'm not talking about, you know, the court of public opinion. I'm talking about behind the scenes between lawyers. It looks like it's, even if it goes up to the Supreme Court, it's going to get tossed because the government cannot draft an individual or a company to do their bidding, period. The end. You cannot be forced to do what they tell you to do under threat of law unless there is some, you know, drastic reason for this. Like, oh, if, you know, we have an individual who's carting a nuclear bomb or something. That's a whole different story than we want to monitor everyone. Now, the FBI is saying it's only for this one phone. Well, it turns out that's a lie. There are at least another dozen phones that are sitting in district attorney's offices, and they've released the announcement that if it goes through with the writ, they're going to serve the same thing on Apple for them to break into the other phones. Well, you, why don't you just put the guys out of business? So to me, this doesn't make any sense. One, it's not the America I grew up in. Second, the all writs, by the way, can be employed for people just as well as a company. So the FBI could come to me and say, we want you to be an informant. And if you're not, I'm going to throw you in jail. That sounds very Stasi-like to me. Okay, that's exactly Stasi-like. Well, they can also approach a business, let's say FedEx. So all of your FedEx employees, all the delivery guys, they need to write up a report at the end of the day with about their interactions with any customers that they don't like, they're suspicious of.
Well, let me interject here real quickly because we're talking about the Stasi. And it's fascinating to me that when the Department of Homeland Security was set up, Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano recruited a guy named Marcus Wolf. Guess what Marcus used to do before he came to work for the Department of Homeland Security?
I'll take a wild guess here. Stasi?
He was head of the Stasi. He engineered and developed the most comprehensive human surveillance network in the world up to that date, and that's the template that they've used and implemented via Homeland Security across every law enforcement agency in this entire government. You're just FYI, you need to know this.
Well, you know, the kick to this is we have an advantage. They're a bureaucracy, okay, which means they're slow, cumbersome, and prone to mistakes. Individuals are quite nimble. But the problem is, of course, is that, you know, a lumbering dinosaur can also crush you. Therein lies, again, you know, I have a constitutional problem. I have a technical problem. My encryption in particular, I use light samples. I don't even trust the random number generators that are given to me in the operating systems. I wonder why that is, speaking of Juniper.
Well, okay. Because the roulette wheel can be weighted to come up with numbers that are known.
Right. And we were talking about Microsoft. Would they do something like that? Golly, gee. Well, it did happen to Android, by the way, and apparently some hackers found out about it, used a mainframe to crack it, and they made themselves several million dollars by cracking bitcoins, and that was back in 2013. I suspect the backdoor was probably originally put in there by the boys at the NSA, and again, this is one of those where a backdoor turns around and bites you. And these guys need to learn that you keep putting in these back doors, and the net result is it's going to bite you in security. Well, that's the problem with the Apple thing. As soon as it gets created, it's going to go out into the wild. We know that the source code will be forced out by court order, because if you take something into a court, the defense lawyers are going to demand to see the source code. Excuse me, it's already happened with a court case where the FBI ran a child porn site to catch people. I'm not kidding. They actually ran one for about the better part of a month, And they've managed to prosecute about 160 guys out of it, even though there were some 200,000 visitors. So your federal government was busy handing out child pornography in the hopes of catching some bad guys.
Well, our government does that a lot. The same thing with the Fast and Furious, that they're giving guns to drug cartels. It's what they do. It's how they do it. But let me ask you another question. How do you encrypt onion sites so they don't get hacked and your bitcoins don't get stolen?
Well, they're using handwritten systems that they've verified, okay? There's a very good system out there that's actually being distributed by a organization called Bouncy Castle, of all things, in Australia. There are a number of verifiable systems that are relatively good. In my case, I'm using Lite. I'm actually using a true random number generator. I don't even trust the pseudo random number generators, which are created with formulas. I'm actually taking samples of Lite and converting that into a random number. Lite's pretty good at random numbers. God sort of plays fun with us, especially with photons. You can never really tell where they are or what they're doing at any one particular time. And if you're interested in reading about that, Stephen Hawking has got a great piece on the net called Does God Play Dice? And it's his conclusion that the dice are photons. Thank you.
You go right back to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. That's exactly what the foundation is. Yes.
And I actually stumbled across it trying to set up fiber optic systems and having to program stuff into them to get rid of that random number noise, simply because even though they're highly integrated electronic systems, there was still spurious photons slipping through. So I'm taking advantage of the fact that light never repeats itself. You never really know where it is. It's just one of those fundamental things of quantum physics. Okay? So now I have this wonderful system that creates these random numbers, and I encrypt with them. I use them in the private key side of my software. And now I see a writ laying on my door with an FBI agent behind it saying, we need to get into this guy's system. He created these keys, and we can't get the key. Now, I can look at him all I want to until I'm blue in the face, tell him, without the key, I can't get in. Because the random numbers, I'm sorry, I'm not, you know, an angel baby. I can't go back in time and space, become invisible, and take that sample that the guy created the key from. It just doesn't happen that way. But I'm pretty certain that I would have difficulty explaining it to an FBI agent and perhaps a federal judge. So from the technical standpoint, combined with the legal, that gives me a little bit of a problem. I kind of look at it like, how am I going to explain to these guys there's no way to recreate the key? I could refer to the mathematics of it, but would they understand? Would they even care?
The answer is no. They're going to expect you to do the impossible because the impossible has been done before. So really, what you're saying here, let me rephrase it. What I'm inferring from you is that the best way to build these things is to build them so that there's no possible way that you could ever reverse it, reverse engineer it if you had to.
That is correct. Once you build something like that, then you run into the other part of the writ, which is technology. The FBI is asserting that Apple is using technology to circumvent the law. That almost sounds like something that you'd prosecute Galileo with, okay? I'm sorry, the Earth revolves around the sun. Wait a second, that's against the law to say that, and we're going to put you under house arrest for the rest of your life. The reality is that the universe and the way that God made it is not one of those things that can be bent by the laws of mankind. No matter how many laws they pass, 2 + 2 is not going to equal 7. And no matter how many laws you want to pass, I can't tell you what kind of light they used 5 years ago or 5 weeks ago or 5 days ago or even 5 minutes ago. Okay? It's impossible. unless I was, you know, a time-traveling invisible angel that could take the sample at the very same time. And we both know that the way the principle works is that once you take the sample, you change the results anyway. So the bottom line on all of this is that when you build these things in this format, they're going to have to come around to terms to accepting it. I'm hoping that that happens, because right at the moment, with what we've talked about before, with the banks, with the power grid, with your sewer system, with your email, with your cell phone, and your texting and everything, we need it. We need it badly. Instead of fighting encryption, we should be heartily embracing it. We should be making it mandatory for our healthcare records. We should be making it mandatory to cover these important areas in our field to protect us from the Chinese, from the Russians, from the mafia, from ISIS. Instead, we are sitting here playing these games. ISIS attacks America, and what does the FBI do? They attack Apple. That sounds like something that Osama bin Laden couldn't have planned better. The bottom line is Apple the enemy here? Should we be bombing a major corporation that supplies income to taxpayers and stockholders and employees in the United States? Shouldn't we be dropping this kind of stuff over, say, Syria and Iraq and Libya? But no, we can't distract the people with our shortcomings, like the Juniper backdoor that's backfired and become a blowtorch that could literally blast the nation into pieces. Or we don't want to mention those 20 million employee records that got mislaid somehow, along with the 5.6 million fingerprint records. And there's blowback all sorts of places with those just those two acts alone. This administration has the poorest record on national security in terms of cybersecurity, the absolutely stinkiest, most rotten. I sat and watched the hearing on the OPM, 21.5 million records stolen, and they looked at the director and said, how come you didn't encrypt that data so it could not be stolen? And the answer was, well, it was a legacy system written in COBOL. Now, for those of you who've never heard of COBOL or think it's from a Battlestar Galactica rerun.
No. COBOL is from the late 60s, early 70s. It was the precursor to Pascal.
Right. Yes. It is a legacy, old, old computer code system. But could you write encryption with COBOL? Guess who wrote encryption with COBOL in the 1980s? And it was good stuff with the Army. Yours truly.
I'm going to guess you.
So
yeah.
The bottom line is the director from OPM either didn't know or was lying through their teeth that there aren't people out there that could have secured them, at least temporarily, until they advanced from the Stone Age into something a little bit more modern. Well, yeah, the truth is, yes, we can. And it's a matter of us wanting to. Instead, at the moment, we're buying the PR story. Oh, gosh, those bad guys, they won't open the phone for our really good guy, FBI guys, even though the FBI guys locked it in the first place.
Well, but they just want to keep you safe. And if anybody who believes that, then 9/11 was brought down by the World Trade Center was brought down by 19 hijackers. But it's all more of the same. It's they use public opinion to try to enforce political agendas.
Well, you know, I kind of think of it in terms of making your own business. If they cleaned up these things, they wouldn't have anything to do. Okay. So.
Well, now that's been one of my themes for a long time, that, you know, ISIS is created by foreign intelligence agencies, so they have an enemy to go justify their budgets to go fight terrorism.
Well, they call it growing your own threat, and the defense industry does this a lot. Now, here's how this works. If you'll recall from the Maltese Falcon, you had Humphrey Bogart with the two policemen standing there And they decide to toast, to have a toast. And the toast is success to crime. And why would a private detective and two policemen be toasting crime? Well, because it's good for business.
It's good for their business.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, the three things that this
Charlie
can do.
Yeah. Charlie, we got our break. Save the three things for the other side of the break. We'll be back in about 4.5 minutes, okay? We'll be right back, folks. Stick with us. Be right back. Well, good evening and welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also broadcasting on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016, and our guest today is Charlie Smith. Charlie, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk about, here's the three things.
The three things that would solve most of our problems. We've discussed encryption. Obviously, by encrypting this data, we could secure things like emails. Clinton would have been well served with that, but I'm sorry, she sent her stuff in the blatant open, and her server was not protected. In fact, Microsoft even wrote warnings about what she was using, saying, don't use this because it's not secure. But encryption would protect the records. And then you have the other parts, which should go in this, audit trails and backups. With audit trails, you can see who's had access to the data. You can watch an audit trail and its operation. So if somebody is sucking off a lot of data, you can cut them off and then ask them what the heck they're doing. An audit trail can come in handy even for a person. For example, I've done this with many of my clients, personal clients, that have come for assistance. Like we had one lady who said, my ex somehow seems to keep finding me. I'm moving to different locations, and he somehow manages to find out where my new address is. I can't figure this out. So I said, let's go over to DMV and run a privacy audit. Essentially, what you can do is go into your most DMVs and say, I want to see who's looked at my licenses, my license records, okay? And generally, when you check it, you'll see, like if you got pulled over, you'll see the state policeman, the trooper, look at your license. You may see an employer do a employment check on your license. You might see your insurance company take a look at it. But when we looked at hers, we saw several massive numbers of hits against her records being done by somebody at the Department of Social Services, Child Support Services. The funny thing is, though, she didn't have kids. So we went over to Social Services and said, went up to their director and said, listen, somebody's hitting this. What gives? Why are you guys looking at her records? Now, at this point, remember, we haven't brought a lawyer in on this. And the guy goes, okay, we'll check. Well, we found out her ex's girlfriend worked for the Department of Social Services. Gee, I wonder how come her ex-husband knew where she was. Gee, we'll never guess who got fired next. Yeah, you got it, the girlfriend.
With cause, yeah.
Right, audit trails. You put logical audit trails on this. You can see who's accessing your data. You can finger them. You can ask them why they're doing that. And a lot of people, a lot of these companies that put this stuff together forget that put in that privacy trailer capability, and you never know who it was that was having access to your records, and they just kind of shrug. Nobody thought of it. Final portion is backup. The IRS lost thousands of Lois Lerner's emails in what was very clearly a politically driven event, trying to get back at some political adversaries by using the most powerful agency of the United States government. And somehow, some way, the dog ate her hard drive. And we don't know what she was shipping back and forth. Well, if they'd had backups, good backups, they could have recovered them. In fact, they actually ended up stumbling over some of those backups and recovering them. Well, you know, therein lies what Hillary Clinton did. In order to avoid the mandatory backups and audit trails, she created her own server, and therefore, from the learning effort that she had from the 1990s, where reporters like myself were doing these wonderful freedom of information requests, she could therefore avoid having that sensitive email being viewed by massive numbers of people and lawyers and others. One of the things I found out doing my FOIAs was that bureaucrats have a tendency to write things down half the time to cover themselves, and the other half is kind of like it's a receipt. Okay, they do a deal, there's a receipt that's written, and by putting that information down, everybody sees exactly what it was. Well, sometimes if that receipt leaks out, that's a problem. Like in her case, you know, we've got questions. Did money slip over the border into the hands of the Clinton Foundation while one was making policy changes that affected both the countries and the companies involved that happened to make that very large donation at about the same time the decision was made? Quid pro quo. So, audit trails, encryption, and backups. Most of these troubles could be avoided if we had those. Now, of course, the FBI doesn't like encryption. You know, why would you want to encrypt your own records? Because obviously you're telling everybody that you can't get in there if somebody happens to encrypt it. So why would you want to protect your own stuff? Because it would look embarrassing if you tried it out in front of, say, you know, the major mass media and they asked you that question. Well, you encrypt your stuff. Why can't we? Then we have the other problem, you know, the privacy audit trails and backups. Well, bureaucrats and politicians don't necessarily like to have evidence. And audit trails and backups leave evidence. So we don't see a lot of, shall we say, push at our political level to put these things into place because you know, somebody might get fired or, hey, even put behind bars for doing something illegal because there was real live evidence left over that one could actually grab onto. Of course, if the FBI was taking care of it, as we both know, like with the shooter in San Bernardino, all you have to do is, you know, let the reporters run all over the guy's apartment an hour after the event and therefore contaminate the crime scene and none of it can be used in court. But I wouldn't want to accuse the FBI of being incompetent by contaminating crime scenes and ruining evidence by telling guys to, you know, change the password on the phone. We would never suggest that. No, not at all.
Well, the FBI has done a ton of that. And, you know, I mean, the FBI, you want to talk about the largest crime scene the FBI ever destroyed? Look at the World Trade Center. They're the ones who carted it all off. Anyway, I digress.
So, well, you know, once again, you don't necessarily want to have your mistake linger. You want to find a good scapegoat, put it on them, and just kind of put away.
And just keep walking, yeah. Just keep
right.
Walking, yeah.
So, you know, the obvious solutions, like encryption, to protect your records and my records and the employment records of everybody who works in the government, that makes too much sense. Of course, the problem that they run into is that the employees that work at the NSA, the CIA, and the FBI, well, their phone numbers, their home addresses, their social security numbers are also out there, and in so many cases, their fingerprints are. So, gee, the guys at Langley, you know what they're having to do? They're having to pull their agents out of China, out of Russia, and other places, because somebody may have their name, their fingerprints, and all of the other IDs that go along with it. So if they figure out who they are, yeah, it could be trouble. So, yeah, the blowback is already happening. We're actually having to pull our agents out of the field because, hey, they got their fingerprint. They've got their employment record. They've got their ID. They got everything all set up right there. And then, okay, how does our federal government protect us? 5.6 million federal employee fingerprints also taken? Well, you know, there's a thing called fingerprint locks on doors, especially highly secure doors. you know, like door number three at Los Alamos. Okay, well, you know, if the Chinese just happen to have a fingerprint that'll get them past there, I'm sure there's a couple of 3D printer programs that'll create it for you. And no, you know, the bio and biometric systems just means how good is the metric in measuring it. We already know that the FBI and law enforcement can bypass fingerprint locks on phones simply by taking your fingerprint, which again takes me back to the, how secure some of this stuff really is. Not. The password is far more secure than your finger because once they drag you in, they got your thumbprint. Thank you.
Indeed.
Well,
they
on
do.
The other hand, you know, the password, this is where I get to the, you know, the point. Most crypto freaks have this fantasy that, you know, the NSA guys are going to sit there and go, oh God, he's got this huge symmetrical key, or, you know, it's 4096 RSA. There's no way that we could break into it in a million years. We'll give up. Or it'll cost us billions of dollars to build a computer, and it'll almost take forever to happen. We can't do that. No, they don't think that. They go, okay, let's get the lead pipe. Where is he? You know, how long can your kneecaps stand this?
We're going to make them tell us.
Okay. So, you know, I can do the encryption security. You need to talk to somebody like Ruger or Smith & Wesson for the kneecap stuff, okay? That's a different story. You know, the secure nature of some of the stuff that I do, and to be absolutely honest with you, some of the it almost seems like I'm taking a sledgehammer and smashing an ant. I have encryption on cell phone that I use all the time. And, you know, it'll be basically exchanging messages with the family and the wife and stuff, and I've, all my clients have it. And nine times out of ten, the message is, oh, I love you, or I'm picking up milk on the way home, or something like that. But nobody in the whole world but you and the other person can read that. Even if someone intercepts it, they can't break in and get that message. Now, you know, the other day when I was at the dentist office and I had to say, can you send me your Social Security number and the insurance number for our new dental insurance? The dentist wants it. And, of course, she sent it back. Or when we were doing the taxes for the kids, we need your driver's license number and all of the information to file for you. You know, that's the kind of stuff that you really do want to have it secure, and you're sending it electronically. If you're doing it over a cell phone, it's a glorified radio, okay? That's all it is. It's a radio with a computer hooked up to it. It goes through at least 9 different IP addresses after it's received by your local carrier before it comes out of a cell tower at the other end. So if you don't think the NSA or a criminal can't hack into it, think again. So it's going to get to the point now, and it already has, where we leak information that's so dangerous, it comes back to bite us. And we do it so freely. I see it all the time on Facebook. I'm vacationing in Hawaii. Here are the pictures right now of me on Maui. And I'm looking at that going, okay, I wonder if the guy down the block who breaks into houses, who lives close to you, is reading your Facebook page and knows where you're at. We've already had the circumstance where these wonderful Apple iPhones, we're going to embed in the picture your GPS location. Good show. Okay, well, you want to know how come your ex keeps finding you? Because you're posting pictures of yourself out on Facebook that has the GPS location. Duh.
Well, that's exactly why I deleted my Facebook account about a year and a half ago. I mean, I just deleted it. I no longer swim in that pond.
Well, I don't. You can tell I don't like Facebook because you're not a customer. You're the product. You're being resold. And again, there are people out there just like myself who object to ad bots and being fed these targeted advertising and things. Well, that's another set of people who impose encryption are the ones that do that. The guys at Google with their Gmail, I write for Android, which is all Google, but Gmail, they have a bot that scans your Gmail. Okay, it doesn't get your name, but it'll send the information. You know, you send to your friend, I'm shopping for a car. Well, suddenly you get a bunch of spam in your box from car dealers and car sellers. Well, guess what their little bot was doing? It scanned your mail, it saw you were shopping for a car, and it spun you this data mining. Okay, that's all it's called. They're doing data mining and then targeted advertising. Well, if you encrypt that, the guys who do data mining and targeted advertising can't read your stuff, and therefore they can't charge to send you that advertising. So advertisers, believe it or not, are one of the biggest opponents of encryption because they can't read what you're doing to hit you with those targeted ads. Data mining is one of those.
What this would do, this would put a this is a really flat tire of the data mining industry if encryption was widespread.
Oh yeah.
Everybody hates data mining. Everybody hates it. You know,
except for the guys who make a living on it.
Except those guys, and those will be the ones who'll be hiring lobbyists on K Street trying to stop it. You need to make encryption illegal.
That's precisely it. And the data miners are not only worried, but they are trying desperately to try to put it, jam a hole in it, as you can tell. They don't want us to be doing this because to do so protects our privacy and keeps them from being able to figure out how much targeted advertising they can shove down our throat. So, you know, there's a number of different privacy aspects, and it's got some great spinoffs here. You can see how come I love this stuff. And it doesn't necessarily have to be from email. I mean, there's a number of other applications. We've already seen the gaming industry make massive use of encryption to protect their product with essentially copyright protection software. That's the gaming and the video and the movie industries trying to do this. And believe me, those guys are pro-encryption because it protects their business. It protects their intellectual property rights. Now, you know, if you're Granny Schicklgruber and you happen to have a great cookie recipe, and you think you just by sharing it with a couple of friends, it's not going to hurt. Well, gee, if one of your friends steals that recipe and then suddenly makes, you know, $100 million company because they can make great cookies and it was your recipe, you'd be a little angry about that. Well, you know, there is always that other aspect, which again takes me to the uselessness of some of the stuff we do. We pay our federal government to monitor international telephone calls, metadata, okay? That's basically who you're calling. It's not necessarily the call itself. It's what number are you dialing, and when did you dial it, and how long were you on? It's kind of hard to mask or encrypt that kind of stuff. Well, the NSA gathers that in massive data, and they actually have admitted that they use it to terminate terrorists at the other end of the line. In other words, to use it for targeting for drones. The only problem I've got with that is if you're monitoring the phone call again from Granny Schicklgruber to her sister in Canada, that's not really protecting national security. So listening in or at least monitoring the phone calls of everybody and trying to store it all in one location, it may be great for a wonderful data mining contractor who sold you this gold-plated monster, but it does absolutely zip to protect America. Again, something that the NSA has openly admitted, as well as the FBI.
In other words, they're about as effective as the TSA.
Less, but it's hard to be less effective. You know, the guys who search nuns going on to an airplane really aren't protecting your security.
No, they're not. See, here's the thing behind TSA. let me give you a little insight here. TSA is not there to protect the public. TSA is there to make sure you're obedient, number one. And after 9/11, it gave George W. Bush a reason to employ, you know, nearly 600,000 people who would be unemployable otherwise. And so it allowed him to bolster the economy at government expense in order to, you know, bring on a new government program, a new government. It's the new post office. Let's just say that.
Well, you know, I've seen the GSA reports on them where 70% of the fake bombs that the auditors sent through got through and were on the airplane. Okay, you know, guys were walking on the plane with guns in their pockets, and you know, these are federal agents testing to see how good TSA is. You know, TSA actually had people in the private side. Security set up with them that were on the terrorist list. Okay, they were hiring the wrong folks, obviously. So, you know,
well. If you listen to the CIA and listen to the FBI, they say, "Look, we're out here to catch the bad guys, so we have to hire the bad guys to help us catch the other bad guys."
The NSA does that too.
That's how bad the logic is.
They do this with what's called zero days. A zero day is a hacker's wet dream. If somebody comes up with a very complex one, they can break into an Apple iPhone, even if it's locked down. And these things can sell for up to $1 million on the black market. Criminals buy them. Well, the NSA, by the way, is the biggest customer on this black market. So we are financing hackers who do this for a criminal enterprise to sell the same thing to our own government. My most favorite one was a group that was turned itself into a company in Italy that was hacked by other hackers that revealed all of their records, and they ended up having to go out of business. And they showed that they were turning over these kinds of zero-day attacks to such nice people like Burma, Nigeria, China, and others, so they could hack the accounts and phones of dissidents to either throw in jail or execute. Yes, that's the kind of people that we do business with.
Well, it is, and it's a sad state of affairs, and it's against everything. And you said the key phrase earlier in the interview, and that is, this is not the America that you grew up in. Same, it's not the America that I grew up in either. This place has changed, and I don't like the change that it's taken. Particularly, it's changed since the murder of JFK, and it's changed again since 9/11. I hate to keep bringing that up, but it's true. So, anyway.
And, you know, the point being is it's not a partisan thing for you or me here. I see it on Democrat and on Republican administrations. I see the same kinds of bureaucratic inefficiency, stupidity, and corruption, collusion, and nepotism. So we have to make some fundamental changes, and I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing such a political revolt against the inner sanctum crowd. Unfortunately, on the Democrat side, it's way too late. They've already sold out. But we see more or less it taking place on the other side. Now, granted, there are a lot of things that Donald Trump has said that I don't like his Apple comments. But I still look at him and go, you know, I'd much rather have him running the show because, one, he knows what to do, and, two, he's going to run it like it's a business, fire people that need to be fired.
Amen. That's so overdue. I mean, these days, you know, everybody who screwed up on 9/11 got a promotion.
It's ruled by committee, so you don't know who to blame.
Blame them
or
all.
If you do blame 100 people.
Clean house. Blame them all.
Well, yes. You know, I don't really mind whether, you know, you know your listeners are thinking I'm going to vote for Sanders or for Trump or for Cruz. You know, the ones I thought were the dynasties, Bush and Clinton. Okay, come on. folks, we can do a lot better than the British and have our own dynasties.
Absolutely. We can never allow another Bush or Clinton to set foot in the White House. And so, you know, I would rather have Bernie Sanders, who's a socialist, and I'm not. I'd rather have him as president than I would have any of the midgets on the Republican side either. Trump's the only guy. Trump is the only man standing among the midgets over there.
Well, I'm not a Bernie fan either, and thank you.
Me neither. Well, Charlie, we're out of time. I'm going to get you back on here again before too long. You're a great guest. Love having you.
We got plenty more things to cover.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll get back to you here in a few weeks, have you back on. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.